again, and welcome to Fiber Hooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next 45 minutes, I'd like you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for our second episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am, I'm the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from our offices here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. I'd like to thank all of you listeners for your very positive feedback and support from last week's show. It was extremely gratifying. And I'd also like to thank you for giving me this time with you this week, today. Before we get to today's guest, I'd like to take a minute to apologize for a mistake I made last week. At the end of the show last week, I said that I was a board member of Warm Up America and thanked Debbie Macomber for her support with her own Knit One, Bless Two initiative for Warm Up America. This was a mistake. Debbie and I used to serve on the board of Warm Up America together, which is why it was stuck in my head. What I actually meant to say is that I serve currently on the board of Halos of Hope, and I wanted to thank Debbie for her support for Halos of Hope as part of her Knit One, Bless Two campaign. Again, I apologize for the confusion and to both foundations. I did post about this mistake at fiberhooligan.com in last week's show notes with links to both of these great foundations. I'll try to do better, folks. I'm very excited about my guest today. He's just a good guy. He has been knitting for over 40 years, and he has been the editor of Knitters Magazine for the last 13 years. He is an artist. He is a designer. He is my co-host and partner in crime at Stitches. I'm speaking, of course, of my friend, Rick Mondragon. Good morning, Rick, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for the invite. I'm happy to be your guest this week.
Oh, it's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to this. This is something that is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm hoping that by the time this is over, you won't hate it so much that you'll agree to come back and do this for every issue, at least for every issue, if not more.
I want it to be on every week.
You want it to be on every
just
week?
Kidding.
Okay.
Just kidding.
Well, here's the secret. If you're funnier than me, then you can't be on again. Because, that's not the secret. Yeah, no, so obviously that's a foregone conclusion. So how was your weekend? What did you do? Did you relax? Did you knit, or did you do quilting this weekend?
We did a little of everything this weekend. Spent Saturday afternoon with Elaine, and we did a little reverse applique, a new thing that we're in love with that we found out about at one of the conferences we went to. And then I swatched a bit for my upcoming talk and things like that, but we'll talk about that later. But just had a nice relaxing weekend.
Well, that's good. That's good. And many of you might not know that Rick and my partner Elaine Raleigh have become quilting fiends. It's the newest obsession, right? Well, you've been a quilter for a long time, though, Rick.
Oh, for about 5 or 6 years. I've been sewing forever, but quilting about 5 or 6 years. That's just kind of a side hobby. It's something without deadlines, so it's a lot more fun in that manner. It's kind of a diversion. You don't have to think.
You work with deadlines?
Sometimes. In fact, I realized that this morning you invited me to be here so that I'd come to work early.
Finally, the truth came out. It's an evil plot. So before we get to knitters, I have decided that I am now a dog lover, and I'm going to embrace that. So I have to ask after Poochie. How's Poochie doing?
Poochie's fabulous. Fabulous. We had one of our fun weekends where we went for our Sunday drive. We napped together on the couch. He got his quilt, and I got mine, and off we went. So
That's
had a nice weekend.
Well, that's great. So you're all rested, and we're starting the week out. So we're going to get into Knitters Magazine today. And folks, before Rick starts going into this, I want to remind you that this is more fun if you have your copy of Knitters Magazine in front of you, K110, or up on your iPad for the Zinio edition. If you don't, I did post a link at the top in the preview about where you can find the patterns on Ravelry, so you can go through them. Rick's going to do his best to remember to tell us page numbers and the titles of these things. So with that, Rick, would you mind giving us a little virtual tour of the newest issue? Actually, before that, let's do this. Rick, tell us the philosophy behind Knitters Magazine and the way you approach Knitters Magazine.
Okay. I approached Knitters Magazine like from three different directions, probably four, but three different directions. One, and first and foremost, I approach it as a consumer. I look at it as if I was going to knit something out of the magazine. Granted, most of the patterns are for women, but still, I approach it as if I want to knit this piece, what do I want to know about it? Why would I want to knit it? That kind of thing. Secondly, I, of course, have a designer audience where I have to solicit designers to provide projects that we can work on and edit together and create something really wonderful. And then I also have to do things that are suitable to my advertisers' products, their yarns. And the philosophy behind Knitters is that, you know, we want projects that people are actually going to knit and that they're going to turn around and wear those pieces. And with that said, you know, you can get patterns anywhere and everywhere, but the nice part about what we try to do is we try to have a little learning lesson with many of those projects. It's not something that you need to know the history, and all the permutations of something, but something where you pick up those needles and you actually get started and you may learn something along the way.
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that people don't understand is just how comprehensive every issue is and how self-contained it is as far as techniques and a learning resource. Would you mind speaking to that a little bit, Rick?
Sure. First, let me start by saying the spreads themselves, we do the picture along with the beginning of the project, if not the complete project, right there on the same spread, because we want all that content together. So once you sit down, you're not fussing with trying to get back and forth within the magazine or get lost. The first page gives you all the materials you need. It gives you the gauge you're going to require. It gives you all the sizes possible. It gives you everything on that spread. And then if there's a little special technique, we sometimes have a little technique box that we call KnitWise within that spread. Or if it's something, everything that's in that pattern, no matter what it is, from cast on to bind off, everything in between is somewhere in the magazine. If it's not in the project itself, it's in the Knitter School, which is in the back of the magazine. Every issue has that, along with a page of pictures of every single one of the yarns at life size scale. So if you don't...
Yes, please.
If you can't get your hands on the exact yarn, you at least know what a compatible yarn is.
Yes, that's, and I think that's an important point, that, you know, it is a completely finished resource. We do occasionally have some web tie-ins for additional content that we make usually free to everybody. I don't think anybody's ever had to be a subscriber to get free content, although it usually has something to do with that. But I think it really is important to remember that, you know, when you pick up a copy of Knitters Magazine and you want to do a project, you're not going to have to refer to another resource in order to be able to do that project.
Exactly. You don't have to go look up what is a three-needle bind-off or what is a, you know, such-and-such cast-on. It's right there. If it's not in the pattern itself, it's back in the school. And we have great drawings. We have great wording. And it's one of those things that all you have to do is swatch and you'll get it.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's fantastic. So your approach to the magazine, and you know, every editor is different, but your approach to the magazine as far as interacting with designers is pretty liberal. Would you care to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I'm pretty liberal. When we come up with a theme, I try to keep it pretty vague. And the reason I do that is because I know what I want in the magazine. I know what I can put in the magazine. But that doesn't mean that the best stuff is something that I haven't thought of. And it gives people an opportunity to take a three-word title, a five-word title, and turn it into something that I never even thought of. You know, sometimes it's as simple as talking about surface design, and somebody comes in with, you know, texture in stitches, and then somebody else comes in with an idea of painting a piece. I mean, there's lots of different ways to approach a subject, and it's kind of, you know, brainstorming, but not in a group, but everybody going individually for that. And I think it makes for a richer product when you have lots of different people thinking about something independently and then coming together to create whatever we're going to create as a finished project or product.
So have you ever had a designer truly just shock you and surprise you and go, oh, you know, okay, well, that's totally not what I thought, but it's wonderful?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've had designers also say, I have this really great idea and give me something that is so off the wall that we wouldn't publish it. And it, not that we wouldn't publish it because we don't want to, but because it's something that just couldn't be done in the format of a magazine. But it's, okay, let's refine that, let's edit that, let's take it down to the bare essentials and get something, let's get your technique or your project or your idea, whatever, and let's refine it and bring it down fine enough so that we can present it within the pages of the magazine and give people a real good taste of your idea.
So this last issue you shot in?
We shot in Miami.
Yeah, so
on
in
South
the middle
Beach.
Of the winter, you got to go to South Beach, right?
Yeah, it's a tough job, but someone has to do it. Yeah, we were in Miami for a week, and we shot actually this issue and the next issue there on South Beach.
Yeah, it's a tough job. It's a very tough job. Yeah, I kept getting pictures from Alexis, you know, of eateries and things like that.
Well,
Yeah, well. To
be honest with you, when I say it's a tough job, I'm joking. But
yeah.
It really isn't as glamorous as one would think.
No,
I mean,
I've been on shoots before.
We work from 6 a.m. to about 3:30 in the afternoon on the photo shoot itself, out on location, because everything we shoot is on location. We do not use a studio for our model shots. But then when we come home in the evening, we then have to review all the photos of the day and make sure that everything went well. And when that's done, then we prep garments for the next day and outfits for the next day. Everything is pre-planned, but they still have to be steamed and pressed and ready to go for the next day, every ensemble. So we put in a good 18-hour day each day of a photo shoot.
Yeah.
So it is tough.
It is. It is. There's so much planning and just so much prep work, and that if something goes wrong, you have to make it up the next day again. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, let's move into the most current issue of Knitters Magazine, the spring 2013 issue, K10. We debuted it at Stitches West a couple of weeks ago, and great-looking issue, Rick. You want to take us through it?
Okay. As we talked about earlier, the simple thing that we gave people was top this, and that was all I gave them to work with, was top this. And I said, let's see what they come up with. You know, granted, I knew we were going to have a lot of tops, shells, sweaters, pullovers, things like that. And off we went. Another thing we do a lot of times is we survey the yarn market and see what's going to be hot for spring or what's new that we might want to do. A lot of what we do are more classic yarns a lot of times, so that, you know, there's some longevity in the pieces that you knit and also in the magazine itself. It's not something that you'll throw away at the end of the season. But I guess to start out, you know, our cover sweater was by Lily Chin, and we call that Chevron Stripes, and it's a cool piece in that it's two colors. It's basically stripes. It's knit sideways. You get the zigzag that's going vertically because you knit it sideways. And what's cool about that, of course, is you're only using one yarn at a time. You knit that up to basically the break, and then the yoke is picked up and knit later at 90 degrees to that. And it, too, has a texture to repeat those zigzags. And, you know, black and white is one of my favorite color combinations. So we did a whole story on black and white garments, and we had four pieces in the issue. Another one was by Jean Frost, and it's called Grids to Go, and that's on page 46. And she actually saw a Armani piece that she liked, an Armani jacket in a fabric that looked like this. She proposed it as a shell. and we ran with it, and we got it done. We were going to press, and the day before it went to press, Jean Frost sent me a note and said, have you seen the latest issue of Vogue UK? The March issue has a sweater on the cover just like mine. And so I went online, looked for Vogue UK March issue, and sure enough, they had a piece that's not exactly, but looks pretty much like it, except theirs is done in beads and paillettes. So it's a garment as opposed to being a knit, but it's pretty amazing. But they looked so close. We were really happy about that. We even mentioned that in our in this issue feature. And then Knitters Design Team and I did a piece that's called Zebra Ripples, and it's on page 40. And this one has a technique attached to it in where you're working the ripple stitch, but you're adding short rows within that ripple stitch so that you get a undulating width within each zigzag of the black and of the white, and they interlock. What was cool about that was, again, we've taken something and we've added a little twist to it to create something different. And if you know how to knit back and forth without turning your work, this piece is a breeze to knit. If you don't, it takes a lot more turns, but it's still worth the work. And then another piece that we were really, really thrilled with was Jane Slicer Smith, who always does incredible things. She did a book with us a while back called Swing Slider Drape. She approached us with a mitered poncho, which is on page 32. It's done in black and white and gray. And it's miters with a couple of cabled and block panels done as a poncho. And it's something that you can wear three or four ways just as you turn it. You can put the miters to the back. You can put the miters to the front or over one shoulder. Really stunning, really graphic, and are really cool. And in those four things that I just mentioned, the coolest thing about all four of those is they're all just stripes. You're only working one yarn at a time. We have another one that's... Go ahead.
No, that's great. I was going to talk a little bit about the Jane Slicer Smith piece because, you know, I think when I saw it, I immediately could tell it was a Jane Slicer Smith design. It's a difference for her, you know, and it's one of the more different pieces in the magazine.
It's pretty stunning. It's one of those pieces that we didn't cast a size, which is a good thing, in that the one size basically fits everyone. And
yeah,
that's always fun. And she does a lot of, you know, wraps and shawls that you can do that kind of thing with, which was really a good thing for us. And, you know, they're just mitered squares. You learn the first one and you kind of go through. We talk you through each and every square in the pattern because there are color changes. But other than that, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, beautiful. I mean, and the shot that you guys got in Miami is excellent for that.
Yeah, very nice shot, very nice shot. And that one and the cover were taken about 25 yards, I'll say, from the busiest spot on Ocean Drive in mid-afternoon. It's a busy, crazy bar, and around the corner is their entrance to their hotel. And then we asked them if we could use that little entrance, and they said, sure. It's a side entrance, of course. And there we go. We had the perfect spot for black and white.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Sorry to interrupt there. Let's move on.
Okay. We have a whole pink story going on as well. And within the pink story, we have a little texture going on. And in that pink story, we have Cabernet Flam on page 54, which is a Kathy Zimmerman design. And Kathy never fails to amaze me with her incredible, incredible stitch work. It's a simple shell, but it's got some great texture from the stitch work. Penny Ullman did another one that's very similar in feel, but it's a lace work. And we call it Peonies in Lace, and that's page 56 right next to it. We go a little lighter in color with Scallops and Ribs by E.J. Slaton on page 60. And that's, it's all a play of texture with, within simple, simple silhouettes. You want to go a little longer, and Laura Bryant has her, I think it's five or six of her hand-dyed yarns that create the texture. So it's basically stockinette stitch with a little accent at the hemline, but basic stockinette stitch with textured yarns all dyed within the same hot pink fuchsia colorways on page 58. That is just stunning, and it's a tunic. You know, we shot it with a pair of pants, but it would look great over a pair of leggings, or if you're daring enough, with just a pair of nice heels and nothing else.
I just wanted to comment real quickly. That is, that project by Laura Bryant is called Razorback Stripes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Razorback Stripes. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Yeah. And, you know, those are probably the fun hot colors going on in that issue. What's newsworthy within the issue is that, you know, we do have great technique. Again, I told you about the short rows and ripple together. We also have an article on Navajo ply, which is chain plying, where you can take a really fine weight yarn, or even a bulky for that matter, but you can take a fine weight yarn and you can basically crochet chain it with your fingers and make large loops to create a heavier multi-ply yarn from one strand of yarn. And that way you get a bulkier yarn. You can use larger needles. You can knit quicker and create something fun. Jean Abel did the article for us, and she did a simple scarf using the technique, mixing it with the chain Navajo ply, and also singly. And then Gwen Bortner did a skirt using the same idea, whereas she did the skirt body with a triple strand, or really it's the chain ply, of a fine linen yarn. It's multicolored hand-dyed yarn, and she did the body of a skirt, knit in the round. When she got to the hemline, she decided to put in knife pleats, and those are done with two strands of that yarn. So once she got done with the Navajo ply, she just cut the yarn, took the two ends from the ball, and worked both ends together as one to create a lighter weight fabric for the pleats, because there's so much bulk in the zigzag of the pleats. There's actually three layers within each pleat, that you used a little bit lighter yarn. And the gauge was slightly smaller, but it didn't matter because you're, again, working it at 90 degrees. And you get a really nice product, really nice slip with the linen, and it's one of those garments that once it's done, it's machine washable and dryable, so it's got longevity.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Can I ask you about stippled blocks, your piece?
Yeah, stippled blocks is actually another one of those stripe patterns, and it was based off black and white. We were looking for a fun yarn, and this yarn actually was shipped to me directly from the mill in Germany, because although Skasel had samples of the yarn, they didn't have enough to do a project yet, because it was going to be a spring-summer release yarn, and I was working on this, I'm going to say, back in December. And so they shipped the yarn to me, and I asked for the black-wrapped one and the pink-wrapped one, and I got the two. Again, it's stripes, but it's actually ribbing. It's knit, purl, knit, purl, knit, purl, one direction, and then in the other one, it's knit, purl, knit three, purl one below, I believe. It's a real simple pattern. It's a two-row pattern, and you work across and back in the dark color, then across and back in the other color, and they just create these little blocks, and the stippling happens from the yarn itself and also from the stitch work.
It's a beautiful texture that you get created on that.
It's really a fun texture, and it looks just as good in solid yarns. But, of course, we wanted something kind of fun and jazzy, and that was the perfect yarn. And it was funny because when I talked to Cyrilla Rose over at Cassell, she said, oh, we have this really cool yarn that you might like. And she sent me pictures and a small swatch, a sample of the piece. I said, oh, yeah, I really like the yarn. She said, it looks real Missoni to me. And I said, it does look real Missoni. And that was the plan. The plan was to do something Missoni. Well, once I got it in hand, of course, we didn't do ripples and we didn't do zigzags. We actually did just simple blocks and stripes. And I think it was really, really effective. It's one of my favorite fabrics that I've played with in a long time.
Great. Fantastic. Can we talk about Kathy Zimmerman's piece? It's a little a different color story than the rest of the magazine, The Surf and Turf.
The Surf and Turf, yes. It is a chainette linen. It's a fine yarn, but not real fine. It's a real fine linen that is chained itself at the factory. So it's kind of a sport weight to fingering weight yarn. Knits up probably on a size 6 needle, if I'm not mistaken. And it's hand-dyed. It's a Fiesta yarn. It's hand-dyed, and she did, again, a scallop, which is a version of a zigzag or a ripple. She did a feather and fan or scallop pattern for the hemline, and then she transitions into basically a reverse stockinette garment with floats, and the floats create all the texture work. And then she, you know, she's a real genius with mixing stitches together. But then she picked a perfect little silhouette where you cut out for the armhole, and then instead of just going straight up to the shoulders, she flares it back out to create just a little cap of a sleeve. And it's not even a cap sleeve. It's just got this nice broad shoulder finish, and then she ends it with this incredible cowl neck, again, done with the stitches of the hem. So very
yeah,
cool
piece. Gorgeous piece. And, of course, when it was on the fashion show runway at West, this really brought the house down just because, you know, it's how luxurious it is. Can we talk about, on page 30 and 31, the heirloom gray shawl?
Oh, the heirloom gray shawl is incredible. It's huge. And it's got an
well, I think we should first tell our listeners what it's made out of first.
It's Kivyat.
Wendy Valley Musk Ox Kivyat, yes.
Which is musk ox fiber. It's the down of a musk ox fiber. And I believe it took 5 balls of yarn, maybe 6. And it starts out with a minimum of, I think it's like 11 stitches. And it grows to many, many, many stitches. It's a V-shawl. And you interrupt that V-shawl in a couple of places along the way. And you put in an I-cord. And we call that internal I-cord. Susan Sarah Bash is the designer, and what she did was she built a built-in I-cord where she basically decreased out and increased back in within the I-cord to create the I-cord across the whole V. Then she comes back and has all those live stitches ready to continue the pattern. And, you know, if you're going for luxury, that one is definitely one of those. And we called it heirloom gray for the simple reason that it will be an heirloom. One, because it's so much beautiful knitting, but secondly, because it's such great fabric.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Not the cheapest project in the world, but, you know, definitely worth it.
What was that? I'm sorry.
It's not the cheapest project to make in the world, but definitely worth
it. No, it's not, you know... Yes, sometimes we balk at the price of something, but when you sit down and realize how much time you've spent to create something that beautiful and how much enjoyment you've had with, believe me, Kivyat running through your hands is pretty incredible. And, you know, I have no idea how many hours it takes to knit the piece. I have no idea how many hours she spent knitting the piece. But believe me, I'm sure she enjoyed every moment. Because I've worked with the yarn. And it's funny because it's a fingering weight yarn. But because it's got the fuzz, you can work that on a needle anywhere from a size 3 to a size 6 needle and get a beautiful, beautiful product.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay, well, great, Rick. Did you have any other pieces that you'd want to call out, or can we talk about, maybe you could tell us about some of your projects in the last couple issues?
in the last, well, since we're right there, I guess we could talk about a couple of them.
Okay. One of the things that I want our listeners to understand is that besides being, you know, a wonderful editor and a tastemaker that I so respect, you are a fantastic designer, and you know, you're always very gracious when you're on stage to defer to our designers, and I really want people to be aware of your designs if possible.
Thank you. I have a certain sensibility in my knitting. And my designs, and maybe that's probably a little more interesting than just telling someone this is what it was and this is what I did.
Sure, absolutely.
But my sensibility is, you know, simple stitching, basically, beautiful silhouette, and not necessarily has to be outrageous, and incredible yarn. And because I am a man, I think is part of the reason, I often default to stockinette stitch, and then I futz around with that. I love color work, and if I could do color work all day long, every day, I'd be perfectly happy. But sometimes that just doesn't make sense for the magazine, and it doesn't make sense for wardrobe for people. So, you know, you have to be sensible. But so some of the pieces that I'm really quite proud of are, going back to the luxury, is I did a couple of pieces recently for Windy Valley Muskox for the magazine. And one of them was called the Gunmetal Cowl. And it's a simple, simple shell done in their silk and kivyu blend. And it's just the simplest of shell shapes, but when you get up to the neckline, you increase a few stitches every few rows in the neckline, and you do that section in garter so it falls into a cowl. And that, I believe, was worked on size 3 needles and for the gauge, and it was not impossible to knit. Again, the silk, the kivyu, just incredible going through your hands. The following issue,
excuse me, Rick, really quickly, let me interrupt real quick. What issue was that in?
Issue 108, I'm sorry.
No problem, 108.
And then the following issue, 109, I did the Ruby Shrug again, and this was in the 100% kivyu. Takes 5 balls of yarn. We're talking about a $500 piece, which is a little pricey, but it would work in any one of their yarns, which is kind of cool. Anyone but their cotton, I would say. But it's called the Ruby Shrug, and it's a simple shrug. We saw a piece similar to it made out of T-shirt material at a little French shop in Chicago on the Miracle Mile a year and a half ago. And it was such a cute little piece. And they wanted $250 for cotton T-shirt fabric. So I thought, well, let's go to Kivyu and let's go ahead and make them $500 piece.
Go big or go home, right?
Yeah. And that one is done on a size 5 or 6 needle, and you're getting basically the same gauge as the Gunmetal Cowl, because of the way the kivyu relaxes and fills in. And I have another couple that I really like, and just because I'm going to talk a little bit more about a follow-up on those. In issue 107, I did a couple of short row pieces. They actually were pieces I did for the challenge that we did at Stitches South last year. And one of them is called Gray Scales, which is a shawl, and the other one is Scallops and Slips, which is a vest. And it's actually, again, playing with short rows in garter stitch. And I created the shawl starts with many stitches and shrinks down to few, creating scallops that interlock. And then the vest is that same stitch pattern, but it's done in the skirt part of a baby doll style vest. And that one I used hand dyed yarns that were in like 6 different colors, semi-solids, that created a really fun piece. And then when I got to the yoke of that baby doll, I did a stripe pattern, but instead of doing stripes just plain, I added a slip stitch to create a pattern. Again, that's one of my favorite things, is playing with stripes. I could do a whole lifetime of stripes and never do the same stripes over.
That's great. Any other pieces that you wanted to call out?
Of my own? No, not necessarily.
You know, one of the things that I love is
watching. I can talk about me all day, but we won't.
No, I'm always happy to talk about you, Rick. I'm a big fan, as you know. One of the things that I love is watching you knit. And you talk about this. You talk about this a lot, about the right way to be knitting. Would you tell people your philosophy on the way you knit and why people should learn to knit the way you knit?
Okay, well, they should knit any way they want. But I believe in economy of effort, economy of time, economy of stress. So I try to knit where there's the least amount of stress put on my hands and wrists and body. And so I do knit back and forth. I am, if people don't know this, many people know, but people don't know this already, I am a left-hander. I learned how to knit as a righty and was the slowest knitter on earth. One morning I woke up and I said, well, that's because I'm doing it backwards. I changed hands, and my speed tripled within one day, and it was amazing. And, of course, now I just knit back and forth. So I knit as a righty one direction and as a lefty the other way. What I like about it is if you have to read a chart, you don't have to do any thinking because you read across right to left and you read across left to right and you're doing okay for each row. The chart is written for how the piece is going to look from the right side and you're always knitting from the right side. I also, you know, I do little demos at Stitches on knitting back and forth. I can teach most anybody to knit in about 15 minutes to knit back and forth if they already know how to knit. And I have little philosophies on that, on how to save time by breaking the rules, but by breaking the rules, you turn around and you make allowances to correct those rules in the following row. So I knit back and forth. What I do when I'm knitting from left to right, which would be the purl row for people, is I actually mount stitches backwards because there's less work, less stress on your hands, less work going on. And then when you work back the other way, instead of knitting through what would be the front loop in the traditional method, you're knitting through the back loop. And Anna Zilborg years ago talked about it doesn't matter how you mount your stitch as long as you understand that there is a leading leg. And the leading leg is the leg of the stitch that is closest to the tip of the needles. So if you always work into the leading leg, you'll never have a twisted stitch, which is right. And my theory is if you always knit into the leading leg, you're going to be fine. My second theory is if you know what the definition of a knit stitch is, you're not going to have a problem because a knit stitch means yarn is held in back and a loop is pulled to the front. That's it. A purl stitch is the yarn is held in front and it stitches pulled to the back. That's the what. That's what is a knit stitch. What is a purl stitch? The where is what's important, and the where is through the leading leg. If you know those two or three rules, however you want to consider those, you'll never have a twisted stitch, no matter how you knit.
Oh, I've seen you do the demo in the booth at Stitches, and it's amazing. People just flock. I think they think it's witchcraft when they first see it.
Yeah. Too bad it's not snake oil, for I can charge $15.99.
We'll give him a deal. It'll be $14.99. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. Today
there
only.
Today only.
Yeah.
For crazy Rick Stitching, we'll go there. Okay. Well, thank you for talking about that because I've seen you do it, and I love watching you knit because it's just so fast. I always tell the story of when we were going to a knit out once upon a time. We had just published a book called Guy Knits. It was a review of men's knitting garments in a book, re-merchandised in yarns. And we were going to this thing, and we didn't have anything for me to wear in currently. And so you asked me to pick a color, and then I picked a pretty complicated vest with cables in it by Kathy Zimmerman, and you measured me on a Friday afternoon and handed it to me on a Monday morning. I was pretty impressed by that. You are a very fast knitter.
Yeah, actually, I had 14 people working behind the scenes.
Ah, did you? Okay. just take the credit.
Well, see, part of it is the fact that when you're knitting back and forth, you spend no time making the U-turns at either end. You don't have to change needles. You don't have to change yarns. It's about, you know, economy of time. And for some reason, the word I want to use, I can't think of right at the moment, but you're getting the idea.
Sure.
I mean, it's I'm not the fastest knitter in the world, and I don't claim to be, and I don't want to be. I just want to be efficient, and that's the word I was looking for. I believe in efficiency, and that's part of it. When I get to the last stitch of a row, I just knit it or knit it, whichever direction I'm going. I make the U-turn and I start back. I actually knit it and place it on the next back on the needle that it came from, and get ready to go to the next row. And so it's the U-turns. I say it's like swimming laps. I'm not the fastest swimmer across the pool, but making the turn at the end, I know how to do that more economically than anybody else.
That's great. That's great. So let's move on to our agenda, make sure we get in this. I extended the show just a bit so we don't run out of time. Is it kosher for you to give us a verbal tease about the upcoming summer issue, K-111?
Yeah, because I'm really proud of that one. I think this one was good. It was a great issue. The other one is going to be a little different in that we're doing five great kid knits, really great kid knits, and we have based four of them off of prior knitters projects. Actually, all five of them are based off prior knitters project, and they're shrunk down. We have a Lois Young sweater that we've miniaturized and turned into a boy's sweater. Kyle Kennecke did a men's sweater a few issues back called Corydon, and he wanted to do it in a miniature version because someone had asked him how it would be sized down for a kid. So we did a kid's version, and we had him do that. We asked Angie Gillingham to take her skirt, Ruffles on the Grade, and shrink that down for us, and she did that. So we have a great little three-tiered ruffled lace linen skirt for 5 to 8 year olds, or 4 to 8 year olds, I should say, that is just adorable. And it's one of those pieces that will be an heirloom piece. You know, grandmas and moms should be really happy with this issue. And I took the funky stripe pattern that I had in the one piece in 108, and I turned that into a little girl's jumper. And then we, of course, have a Chanel jacket. And what inspired this was Kyle's request to maybe publishing a kid's version of the boys, of the men's sweater. And also, one of our coworkers, our managing editor, Karen Bright, has a granddaughter who's 4. And everything that comes in from the designers for an issue, she goes, oh, I wonder how that would translate in a littler size. So she kind of got us thinking, and we said, let's do it. So we did five kids' garments. Another thing I'm really, really proud of is we have some pretty classic tops coming out in the next issue. But what's cool about those classic tops is we're sizing them in 10 sizes. And we're not going extra small to 3X or 6X or whatever. We're not even labeling them that way this time. We're labeling them to circumference. So we're going to go from 36 to 54, and they're going to be in 2-inch increments. The challenge there for the knitter will be to find out what size they really want to make, but that's not going to be too difficult because they have sweaters they like. And, you know, there's always been there's usually a 4-inch increment between sizes within sweaters. Well, if you're a 34, that means there's two extra inches in a 36. But if you're a 32 and that's the only size that is, that means there's 4 inches, makes it fit a little bigger than you might want. Here's an opportunity to size it more towards your sizing. And what I like about what we're doing is if you just sit down and look at the pattern and analyze what's happening between sizes, you can almost start converting that theory into your own work. But that's one thing I'm really proud of. I've got 5 sweaters that are sized that way in that issue. And then, you know, stitch repeats sometimes are an issue for sizing sweaters and things like that. In this situation, we came with pretty small repeats in the sweater, so there's not a problem. We also have some really neat jackets for women, 3 really neat different-looking jackets for women. One's kind of a shrug. One's a jacket with a wonderful kimono-type front done in variegated yarn by Laura Bryant that's zigzag. It actually creates an argyle with her hand-dyed yarn. Then we have another one that has really pretty lace work for the collar. And we have a couple of really neat guys' cardigans that are coming up that I'm really excited about, too. In fact, I would wear them both. But then I, you know, that doesn't mean anybody else would, but I would wear them both. They're a lot more conservative than what I normally wear, but they're really
beautiful. I'll love them then. You know me.
Yeah.
You know me. Yep. Well, that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. Are we going to be bringing those pieces to Stitches South?
I believe so.
That's fantastic. So if you're coming to Atlanta, you'll get a chance to preview those things. We will not have the next issue coming out at Stitch South, but shortly thereafter, I think. Well, a couple of weeks after we get home, I think. Yeah. Just too quick a turnaround between West and South. Speaking of South, let's talk about South for a minute. We didn't really talk about that. You are the opening day presenter at Stitch South this year.
I am, and I'm really, really excited about it. Probably not as excited as as the people who will be in the audience until they get there. But, you know, I'm really excited about it because it's about swatching, which people usually groan when you tell me they have to make a swatch. But we all knit because we like to knit. I don't think any of us really knit because we have to have something done at the end of the day or the end of the week or the end of the month or the end of the year, whatever the case may be. We actually knit because we enjoy it. So why not make swatching part of that game that you enjoy? You know, swatching is more than gauge, size, fabric, and pattern repeat. You know, it's a way to figure out shaping. It's a way to figure out edgings. It's a way to figure out trims, to see the hand of the fabric and how it's going to handle, and even how you're going to care for that finished garment. You can take a swatch and you can abuse it as much as you want and see what it's going to do. That way you don't destroy a sweater later on. And, you know, if you're doing color work, it's perfect to do color work in a swatch and give it a wash and make sure that none of the colors bleed. And if they do, then you know you have to wash the yarn before you make the sweater and make sure that there's no dye that's going to move. You know, it's basically research and development. And what led me into it was funny because Elaine and I came up with the same idea at the same time, but at different places. And then we came together and said, oh, let's do this. And the reason for the swatch idea is, number one, it always happens when you're doing a class, when you're teaching a project of some sort, you make people do a swatch or you have them do a swatch ahead of time, and then you discuss the swatching and you hear the rumbles, the grumbles, the happiness, the disappointment, whatever's happening in that swatch. But that's your starting ground. But for me, in taking submissions from designers, a lot of times I'll get live swatches, which I really prefer, and then I get to see how they understand what they're doing. But every once in a while I'll get something, or quite often now I'll get something via email, and I have no idea, other than looking at the swatch, that they really understand what they're doing, if that makes any sense to anybody. But I don't have a chance to see what the fabric feels like, how it's going to handle, how it's going to drape, and even how they handle the finished ends, because that's really important to me. Many times, and this has happened in the last 13 years that I've been here, we'll get something for a variegated or a stacking yarn, and we'll get a swatch that is 4 or 6 inches wide, and it's a beautiful swatch. But the designer hasn't thought, well, wait a minute, this is going to have to be 16, 18, 20, 22, 24, 26 inches wide, and it's going to change with each size that I do. And what is that stacking or striping or argyling, whatever the yarn is doing in the 4-inch swatch, how is that going to translate into a finished product of larger size? So that's what, you know, that's what swatching is all about, and that's why I'm so passionate about swatching, and I'm really excited because I've got a list about a mile long of things I want to say about it, but we're running short on time. So
it's okay if people want to know more about that. You know, head on down to Atlanta. It's still time. Flying to Atlanta is cheap,
yeah.
Folks. Come and check out Stitches South. There's my
shameless
plug.
I'm also teaching a class on swatching there actually on Sunday.
Yep.
Which is a rare occurrence for me these days, is to teach a class.
Well, you're so busy with the fashion show, which you do, you know, you and Fontel do an excellent job with. You know, I don't know how you find the time, but it's wonderful that you are teaching. Everybody who's takes your classes just rave about them. Well, I mean, when I first met you, you were a teacher of ours in Oakland. That's my first time you and I met.
Right.
One of our most popular teachers ever. So, you know, we are running out of time. I want to get to one more thing. Is it too early to ask about your book?
No, because you just did.
Okay.
I'm working on a book. I'm hoping to have it out next year. We were hoping for the first of next year, but I don't think that's going to happen because I've got a little waylaid with quilting, which I've got to quit doing. But, you know, part of that's, the book, I guess, is, you know, I guess my favorite part is we have a title. And it's something that I came up with years ago, and I've sat on for years. And I want to call it The Knitter's Way. And knitters, of course, meaning, you know, the way the knitter's editor does it, the way the knitter's editor, you know, drives it, whatever the case may be. And that's kind of, I guess, maybe more like the overview heading, and I'm not sure exactly what the finessed title will be, because the book itself is going to be on color and technique. Of course, people who knew me from before the editor days know that I've developed a couple of color techniques in knitting that are different. You get a traditional look of intarsia, but you approach it in a different way. I also have a great stique technique that's, you know, color work as well. So it's going to be color and technique along with fit, because we fit most of our sweaters here at the magazine under the theory I've been using for 20-some years, and it seems to be working. And so this is kind of the secrets behind the fit will be there as well. Again, how refined and how extensive this is going to be, I'm not sure yet, but I'm really excited. I'm working on projects right now and have some pretty cool ideas. Again, the garments aren't going to be earth-shattering, but I think the techniques and theories behind them and color work, ways to make your knitting better and quicker and easier, are what's going to make it a fun book to have.
I can't wait till it's out and can help bring it to the world. I know it's going to be exciting. Absolutely. Thank you. So is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we signed off for the day and we slide on out?
I don't think we've basically forgotten much, if anything.
Okay.
I'm always encouraging people that if they want to, you know, submit to the magazine, to go ahead and do so. We're pretty accessible. There are times in my life, and it happens at once every couple, 3 years, I sit down and I go, maybe I'm too accessible. And then I realize, no, this is what I want to be. I'm not in an ivory tower. I'm here. If you want to talk to the editor, you actually can. I'm accessible here at the office. I'm accessible through email. And I don't mind, you know, helping people. But if people want to submit to the magazine, please do. Again, we have themes. We send out calls for designs. But they're not concrete. I have a really big imagination. I sometimes can turn a skirt into a top and put it in a top issue. So not everything has to be right within the theme. So if you have a great idea, go for it. And know that we're here to support you. I mean, I thank, you know, I thank the people who support us, you know, especially the readers, because we wouldn't be here without them. But the readers and, you know, our advertisers are amazing. The designers I work with, I just love. I wish, you know, everybody had a chance to work with me. I think they'd have an understanding more of what we do and why we do it and how we do it. And it, I think everybody who has worked with us has come out with, if not a better understanding, just a little more insight to even their own work. And with that said, I better shut up.
No problem. Well, Rick, thank you again for joining us this morning. Again, I hope you'll come back after the show and talk to us about the next issue.
Oh, that'd be great.
All right, Rick. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Folks, that was Rick Mondragon, our editor here at Knitters Magazine. You can catch up with Knitters Magazine at knittinguniverse.com/knitters. This is something you're going to want to bookmark. We do have a surprise for our listeners today. As a thank you for tuning into the podcast, we're going to be offering a promotion for 25% off Knitters Magazine until April 1st, 2013. This applies to the print version as well as the digital version, and you'll have to go to the show notes, which I promise I'll have up yet today, at fiberhooligan.com to get the code and the links you need to redeem this offer. Next week, my guests will be Belinda Creech from Elephants Remember Joplin, Pam Hashke from Halos of Hope, and Marion Rose from the Atlanta Knitting Guild. We're going to be talking about our Under the Sea for Kids campaign, a hat and toy bombing for children who are being treated for cancer at Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, Eggleston, and Scottish Rite. This is a really great story, and you're going to want to tune in to hear from these amazing women. Again, regarding show notes, you'll find those later today with at fiberhooligan.com. And I promise I'm going to have them up today so that you can take advantage of that offer. I want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I do not promise to respond to every email, but I do promise to do my best to read every email. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. So be careful what you write. I'd like to wish all of you a glorious week. And remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with me. I'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligan.